5. The jail had been spending a lot more time with the beasts. She swam with the great fish and the sea-evolved mammals and reptiles. She donned a flower suit and cruised high above the sea with her wide wings extended alongside the dirigible creatures in the calm currents of air and the cloud layers. And she donned a full jail field suit with a secondary AG unit and carved her way amongst the poison gases, the acid clouds and the storm bands of the upper atmosphere. Surrounded by noxiousness and the ferocious beauty of the ecosystem there. She'd even spend some time walking in the ship's topside parks. The nature reserves, which the sleeper service had possessed even when it had been a regular, well-behaved GSV and diligent member of the contact section. The parks, complete landscapes with hills, forests, plains, river and lake systems, and the remains of small resort villages and hotels, covered all the great ship's flat-top surfaces, and together measured over 800 square kilometers. With the humans gone from the ship, there were fairly large populations of land animals in the parklands, including grazers, predators, and scavengers. She'd never really paid any of them much attention. Her interests had always been with the larger, buoyant animals of the fluid environments. But now that they were all likely to suffer the same exile or unconsciousness as the rest, she'd started to take a belated, almost guilty interest in them. As though, she thought ruefully, her attention bestowed some special significance on the behavior she witnessed, or meant anything at all to the creature's concerns. Amorphia didn't come for its regular visits. Another couple of days passed. When the Avatar came to her again, she'd been swimming with the purple-winged triangular rays in the shallow part of the sea extending beyond the sheer 3-kilometer cliff which was the rear of the craft. Returning, she'd taken the flyer, which the ship habitually put at her disposal, but asked it to drop her at the top of the scree slope beneath the cliff facing the tower. It was a bright, cold day, and the air tasted sharp. This part of the ship's environment was cycling towards winter. All the trees, save for a few everblues, had lost their leaves, and soon the snows would come. The air was very clear, and from the top of the scree slope she could see the edge islands 30 kilometers away, out close to where the inner containment field of the ship came down like a wall across the sea. She'd scrambled down the scree in small rattles of stones, like dry fanning rivers of pebbles and dust. She'd long ago learned how to use her altered center of gravity to her advantage in this sort of adventure, and had never yet fallen badly. She got to the bottom, her heart beating hard, her leg muscles warm with the effort expended, and her skin bright with sweat. She walked quickly back through the salt marsh, along the paths the ship had fashioned for her. The sunline was near setting when she returned to the tower, breathless and still perspiring. She took a shower, and was sitting by the log fire the tower had lit for her, letting her hair dry naturally, when Gravius the blackbird rapped once on the window and then disappeared again. She pulled her rope tighter about her as the tall, dark-dressed figure of Amorphia climbed the stairs and entered the room. "Amorphia," she said, tucking her wet hair into the hood of the robe. "Hello. Can I get you anything?" "No, no, thank you," the Avatar said, looking nervously around the circular living room. Dejail indicated a chair while she sat on a couch by the fire. "Please." She pulled her legs up underneath her. "So, what brings you here today?"
"I..."
The Avatar began, then stopped and pulled at its lower lip with its fingers,
Well, it seems.
It started again, then hesitated once more. It took a breath. The time, it said, then stopped, looking confused. The time, Tjael Galion said. It's come, Amorphis said, and looked ashamed. For the changes you talked about.
Yes, the Avatar said, sounding relieved. Yes, for the changes. They have to start now. In fact, they have already begun. The rounding up of the creatures comes first, and the... It looked unsure again and frowned deeply. The de-landscaping, it gulped. It tripped up on the next words in its rush to say them. The angiometry, the angiomorphologizing, the... The pristinization, it said, almost shouting.
Tjael smiled, trying not to show the alarm she felt.
I see, she said slowly. So, it's all definitely going to happen.
Yes, Amorphis said, breathing heavily. Yes, it is.
And I will have to leave the ship.
Yes, you'll have to leave the ship.
I'm sorry.
The Avatar looked suddenly crestfallen.
Where am I to go?
Where? Confused.
Where are you going to stop? Or where will I be taken? Is it another ship, or a habitat, or an O, or a planet? A rock? What?
The Avatar frowned again.
The ship does not know yet, it said. Things are being worked out.
Tjael looked at Amorphia for a while, her hands absently stroking the bulge of her belly under her robe.
What is happening, Amorphia? She asked, keeping her voice soft. Why is all this taking place?
I can't. There is no need for you to know. The Avatar said hesitantly.
It looked exasperated, and shook its head as though angry, gaze flicking up and around the room as though seeking something. Finally, it looked back at her.
I might be able to tell you more later, if you will agree to stay on board until a time comes when I can only evacuate you by another vessel.
She smiled.
That sounds like no great hardship. Does that mean I can stay here longer?
Not here. The tower and everything else will have gone. It will mean living inside the GSV.
Tjael shrugged.
All right, I suppose I can suffer that.
When will that have to happen?
In a day or two, Amorphis said.
Then the Avatar looked concerned and sat forward on the seat.
There. It's possible. It's possible. There might be a slightly increased risk to you staying aboard until then.
The ship will do all it can to minimize that, of course, but the possibility exists, and it might be.
Amorphia's head shook suddenly.
The ship, would like you to remain on board if possible until then. It might be important.
Good.
The Avatar looked as though it had startled itself. Tjael suddenly recalled having held a tiny baby when it had farted loudly. The look of utter blinking surprise on its face was not dissimilar to that on Amorphia's face now.
Tjael choked back an urge to laugh, and it disappeared anyway, when, as though prompted by the thought, her child kicked within her. She clamped her hand to her belly.
Yes, Amorphis said, nodding vigorously. It would be good if you stayed on board. Good might come of it altogether, It sat staring at her, panting as though from exertion. "Then I'd better stay, hadn't I?" T'Jael said, again keeping her voice steady and calm.
"Yes," said the Avatar, "yes, I'd appreciate that, thank you."
It stood up suddenly from the seat, as though released by a spring within. T'Jael was startled. She almost jumped.
"I must go now," Amorphis said.
T'Jael swung her legs out and stood to more slowly.
"Very well," she said, as the Avatar made its way to the staircase set onto the wall of the tower. "I hope you'll tell me more later."
"Of course," the Avatar mumbled.
Then it turned and bowed quickly and was gone, footsteps clattering down the stairs. The door slammed some moments later. T'Jael Galayn climbed the steps to the parapet of the tower. A breeze caught her robe's hood and spilled her heavy, still wet hair out and down. The sunline had set, throwing highlights of gold and ruby light across the sky and turning the starboard horizon into a fuzzy violet border. The wind stiffened. It felt cold. Amorphia was not walking back this evening. After the creature had hurried up the narrow path through the tower's walled garden and out of the land gate, it just rose up into the air without any obvious AG pack or flying suit, and then accelerated through the air in a dark, thin blur, curving through the air to disappear a few seconds later over the edge of the cliff beyond. T'Jael looked up. There were tears in her eyes, which annoyed her. She sniffed them back angrily and wiped her cheeks. A few blinks, and the view of the sky was steady and unobscured again. It had indeed already begun. A flight of the dirigible creatures were dropping down from the red-speckled clouds above her, heading for the cliffs. Looking closely, she could see the accompanying drones that were their herders. Doubtless the same scene was being repeated at this moment, both beneath the grey surface of the sea on the far side of the tower, as well as above, in the region of furious heat and crushing pressure that was the gas giant environment. The dirigible creatures hesitated in the skies above. In front of them, a whole area of the cliff, perhaps a kilometre across and half that in height, simply folded in on itself in four parcel-neat sections, and disappeared backwards into four huge, long-glowing halls. The reassured dirigible creatures were shepherded towards one of the opened bays. Elsewhere, other parts of the cliffs were performing similar tricks. Lights sparkled in the spaces revealed. The entire swathe of grey-brown scree, easily 20 kilometres across and 100 metres in both depth and height, was folding and tipping in 8 gigantic Vs, and channeling several billion tons of real enough rock into 8 presumably reinforced ship bays, doubtless to undergo whatever transformational process was in store for the sea and the gas giant atmosphere. A titanic bone-resounding tremor shook the ground and rumbled over the tower, while huge clouds of dust leapt billowing into the chilly air as the rock disappeared. T'Jael shook her head, her wet hair flapping on the sodden shoulders of her robe, then walked towards the doorway which led to the rest of the tower, intending to retreat there before the clouds of stone dust arrived. The blackbird Gravius made to settle on her shoulder. She shooed it off, and it landed, flapping uproariously, on the edge of the open trapdoor.
"My tree!" it screamed, hopping from leg to leg. "My tree! They've... I... my... it's gone!"
"Too bad," she said. The sound of another great tumble of falling rocks split the skies. "Stay wherever it puts me," she told the bird, "if it'll let you.
Now get out of my way.
But my food for the winter, it's gone.
Winter has gone, you stupid bird, she told it. The blackbird stopped moving and just perched there, head thrown forward and to one side, right eye staring at her, as though trying to catch some more meaningful echo of what she just told it. Oh, don't worry, she told it. I'm sure you'll be accommodated. She waved it off its perch, and it flapped noisily away. A last earthquake of sound rolled under and over the tower. The woman, Dejail Galion, looked round at the twilight rolling grey dust clouds, to see the light from the opened bays beyond shine through, as the pretense at natural form was dispensed with, and the overall shape of the craft's fabric began to reveal itself. The Culture General Systems Vehicle Sleeper Service. No longer just her gallant protector, and a grossly overspecified mobile game reserve. It seemed that the great ship had finally found something to become involved with, which was more in keeping with the extent of its powers. She wished it well, though with trepidation. The sea like stone, she thought. She turned and stepped down into the warmth of the tower, patching the bulge that was her sleeping, undreaming child. A stern winter, indeed, harder than any of us had anticipated.